Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Earlier today, Chris Stewart, the family attorney for Rashard Brooks, spoke about Brooks' deadly encounter with Atlanta police last Friday night. Brooks' name is now added to others like George Floyd, Philando Castile, and Eric Garner. Amid the growing list of black men who have had fatal police contact are men who are concerned that they may be next. Najun is post-traumatic stress disorder awareness month. Now tonight we take a look at black men and mental illness, specifically how the fear of a police encounter is impacting them. My guest is Dr. Robert Evans. He is a licensed clinical professional counselor. And we also want to hear from men tonight who are concerned about police encounters. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Dr. Evans, before we get into this conversation, I want you to listen to what Chris Stewart said today during the press conference.
People are asking, well, why would he resist when they were trying to put him in handcuffs? Well, they put George Floyd in handcuffs and he was subsequently killed. So just getting put in handcuffs, if you're African-American, doesn't mean, oh, you're going to get nicely taken to the back of a police car. So especially watching this video of George Floyd over and over again, his reaction may have been, I'm not getting put in handcuffs. So we can't just toss it out because he resisted. George Floyd didn't, and it ended the same way.
What do you think about that, Dr. Evans?
Well, I think what he said was really on point. You know, what we understand about PTSD is that you do not have to be a direct victim. You don't have to be in the room or experience the trauma to actually experience PTSD. And people who watched that video of George Floyd over and over and over again were definitely traumatized. I was talking to one of my clients today, and his response to just having police sirens behind him is he's questioning, am I going to make it home? He's not questioning, am I going to get a ticket? He's questioning, am I going to live through this? And that's the response from a lot of men.
That is really fascinating because, as I mentioned, you know, we've seen the video of Eric Garner. We've seen the horrific video of Philando Castile and, of course, George Floyd just a few weeks ago. And now the video regarding Rashard Brooks. The difficult thing is that the Brooks video and the Floyd video have both come within 30 days, and there has been a national impact on just about everyone, but particularly black men. What else are your patients telling you?
Oh man, this thing has been way before the most recent events of the pandemic. And, you know, starting to begin in 2020, we've had the pandemic been a direct assault on the black community. So just that alone was already having people, you know, unemployed, you know, anxiety about whether or not I'm going to be able to pay my bills. And then you have multiple, you know, innocent people who are being murdered on camera. You know, people are just afraid. And to be put in handcuffs at this point by white officers, especially after you're seeing videos of officers also lashing out, some officers are actually lashing out on people. They're shooting them with rubber bullets. They're responding. Their response is not all kumbaya. So who knows what's going to happen if I get put in handcuffs? And so, you know, the response that I'm getting is people just don't want to come out. Very few people want to go down to see the Black Lives Matter plaza, see the mural on the ground. They're like, I'll catch it on the news, because leaving outside of their room is a risk that they may not make it home at night.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're taking a very serious look tonight at the impact of the recent deadly encounters with police on the mental health of black men. This is post-traumatic stress disorder awareness month. And if you have a comment, if you have a question about this, if you are concerned about the possibility that you could have a deadly encounter with police and what impact it's having on your emotional health, again, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Of course, we'll be taking as many calls as we can. George, calling from D.C. George, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, okay. My question is Mr. Brooke was sitting in a car in a parking lot asleep. What crime did he commit?
I cannot, to that particular point, George, speak about the legality of the alleged crime. Because tonight we're really trying to focus on the emotional impact of what has happened. And so, unfortunately, we don't have a legal expert to really dissect the legal part of this. But certainly we, you know, can say, and certainly if you want to speak to this particular issue, Dr. Evans, you can, that this really did start off somewhat innocuously from what we've seen in the video, the police video that has been released. This was a safe encounter to begin with. Dr. Evans?
Right. I mean, what we have to understand, George, is that, you know, Mr. Brooks, he was in fear of his life. So his response was not the most appropriate response. He was fighting with the officer. So we can't argue whether or not he was right or wrong. We're talking about why he responded the way he responded. His emotional response on whether or not I'm going to make it home tonight will have anybody break the law. If they feel like it's between me getting arrested or me making it home, what you going to do? And so that's what people are in fear of at this point.
George, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. CJ, calling from D.C. CJ, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead, please.
How are you today?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, what's on my mind is, you know, every time these incidents happen, they keep talking about changing criminal laws, and a lot of things that they talk about changing are already illegal, and a lot of us aren't criminals. So I think just dealing with the criminal aspect of it isn't that satisfactory. They really need to deal with the fact that this goes against black men that either when they're criminal or not criminal.
Well, and to that point, CJ, let's take you, for example. You are calling from Washington, D.C.
Yes, sir.
Have these videos, the George Floyd video, the Rashard Brooks video, has it given you pause about how you conduct yourself once you leave your home?
I am a college-educated person. I went to school in Richmond, Virginia. I hope that I speak articulately and I speak well, but I've been arrested 14 times. I've been arrested 3 times in the last 3 years. I've been arrested for outstanding child support, which I have no children. I got arrested for being 10 minutes late in the courtroom. I went up to the attorney and told I was 10 minutes late. They placed me under arrest. So it's an ongoing situation for black men, and it doesn't matter if you're articulate. It doesn't matter if you can't speak. It doesn't matter if your pants are hanging off your behind. If you are a black man, you are a problem in America.
CJ, thank you so much for your contributions to the conversation. I really appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about post-traumatic stress disorder and the impact on black men's mental health amid the recent deadly encounters with police. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call. Lines are open. We definitely want to hear your thoughts tonight at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Talk to me a little bit, if you can, Dr. Evans, about what goes through the mind of someone who... This is so difficult. When you're talking about what happened to Rashard Brooks, where this went from, as they say, from zero to 100 in what appeared to be a matter of seconds. The whole fight or flight response, what is that?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question because, you know, each one of us experiences trauma in a different way. You know, when it comes down to post-traumatic stress disorder, we're talking about how our bodies respond to trauma is ultimately for survival. It's ultimately, how is your body going to adjust to this trauma so that you can get through, so that you can survive? And, you know, that's what this is all about, is how are we going to get home? How are we going to make it home tonight? And when you have an individual who, you know, and we're talking about complex trauma, we're not talking about one trauma. We're talking about trauma on top of trauma. And we don't know his upbringing. We don't know if, you know, how he has experienced trauma throughout his life, and as far as what he was told by his parents about his interactions with police officers and what he should do, how much fear he already had as a result of just being Black. You know, there's so many quotes that I could give you about how just being Black in America and waking up, you know, it's no wonder that we lead in stroke and hypertension and things of this nature. When we're talking about what was going through his mind, the only thing I saw was, I need to get home. I need to get away. And, you know, of course, we don't know whether he was under the influence and things of that nature, but you don't have to be under the influence to want to survive. And when the adrenaline kicks in, either you're going to, you know, you're going to run or you're going to stand still. What are you going to do? And at that point, when you have watched a video over and over again of a man putting his knee on another man's neck with handcuffs on and being held down, and then you're interacting with two white officers and getting handcuffs put on you, I can only imagine what he was thinking.
Well, and we do know that in the Rashard Brooks case that he did fail the sobriety test, mm-hmm. and that he was, you know, under the influence. But, and that's just one particular case. But again, I go back to the, you know, the Philando Castile case in Minnesota. He was not under the influence. Mm-hmm. Eric Garner, not under the influence. And I could spend the rest of this program naming names mm-hmm. of Black men and Black women who have had encounters with police, deadly encounters with the police, who were not under the influence. And so speaking specifically to, you know, a mindset, what if you never had to worry about it before? Are these recent incidents causing Black men specifically a form of PTSD that prior to this they probably never thought was an issue for them?
I would say it's absolutely possible. You know, I myself, just watching the video, was traumatized at what I saw, you know, and I can only imagine what other people experience. So I would say absolutely some people are experiencing trauma. Some people, it messed up a lot of people's sleep.
Yeah.
You know, which is one of the side effects of PTSD, is just not being able to get to rest. And when we can't get to rest, all types of things happen as far as psychosis. It mimics being drunk when you don't get any sleep. So, you know, a number of things can happen as a result of what was experienced and just watching the video of these individuals. And Floyd was just one example. But again, when you're talking about trauma on top of trauma, back-to-back people being killed, you know, with the Ahmaud Arbery case where he's running and gets attacked by individuals on the street, you know, it's absolutely a fact that some people have been traumatized. And what I saw is someone who was fighting for his life.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you are doing that, that means that if there's something going through your mind that's saying that I don't have any other choice. And that can happen, you know, just as a result of one traumatic event. So just after watching that one video, and of course, you know, there was an outpouring of a response as a result of seeing this. So people across the world were traumatized by this, not just people in America. So it's absolutely people closer to home who are on ground zero are absolutely going to be traumatized by what took place. And, you know, what we got to begin to talk about is how are we going to adjust? And I like the idea of the defunding concept of the police, which means that we're just talking about putting money in places where instead of calling the police on a guy who's sitting in the car quiet, let's call the responders that are going to show up and be trained in the appropriate way to interact with someone who could be suffering from a mental health challenge like PTSD. Instead of sending the police, let's send the right people.
Hmm. Good point. Let me go back to the phone lines. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Oris calling from Upper Marlboro. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Harold Fisher, how are you, sir?
Just fine, thank you. Go right ahead. Got about a minute.
I am a retired police officer. I got 1 minute.
Yes, sir.
I just want to respond to the incidents of police activity, not only activity, but the police conduct that I was a police officer for 20 years in the Washington, D.C. Police Department.
30 seconds, Oris. I'm going. Make your point, please. Go right ahead.
My understanding, why are people being shot in the back?
Mm-hmm.
They should only use their guns to defend themselves or others. And if a person is running away, then if you can't chase him down, then let him go. It is a policy that the police officers of today were not like the police officers of yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
When we were on the job, they didn't shoot people in the back because they were running away. No matter what, if you're running away, you are not a threat. And I think that is an issue that I seldom hear discussed on your program, and I listen to you every day.
Well, thank
that
you.
People should not be shot in the back if they are not a threat.
Well, I appreciate that, and I think you do make a good point. And indeed, that is one of the points that was being made by the family attorney today, which has caused a great deal of consternation, not only in this particular case, but in other cases that we have seen in recent years, which kind of compiles some of the broader issues that are being discussed. But thank you so much. I really appreciate you giving us your point of view. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're going to continue to take these phone calls even after 7:30, as we always do. I encourage you to give us a call as we make the switch over to SiriusXM. So stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm continues on WHUR. This conversation will be on SiriusXM Channel 141. Stay with us. I still want to hear from you. Keith from Baltimore, you're next. Stay with us.
Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about post-traumatic stress disorder awareness. June is Awareness Month for PTSD. We continue our look at Black men and mental illness, specifically how the fear of a police encounter is impacting them. My guest is Dr. Robert Evans. He is a licensed clinical professional counselor. We want to hear from men tonight who are concerned about police encounters. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Keith from Baltimore, thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
To me, what's going on in the mind of the police officer is there's this time bomb ticking in his brain, and he's just saying, just give me the opportunity. Just give me the opportunity.
And you really think that's the case?
Oh, yes. Harold, look, I've been in situations. It doesn't matter how many degrees you got, what's your education, what's your socioeconomic status. If you are a Black male living mm-hmm. in America, all you have to do is be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And you will be subjected to harassment, abuse, and it's a really scary situation. Now, what this brings up for these flashbacks. My flashback goes all the way back to slavery. And my flashback goes all the way back to strange fruit hanging from trees. And to see, to just know that, that black men were hanging from trees with their testicles in their mouth.
So how does that, let me ask you this, because I want to bring this, I want to bring this back to where we are certainly right now and the impact on your day-to-day living. Talk to me about that real quick, if you can.
I'm bringing it from that to the here and now.
Okay.
That nothing has changed. And I'm from Baltimore. And if you've been following what's going on over here in Baltimore, we got police officers stealing, taking drugs from the drug dealers and redistributing it back on the street. We got the police involved in all kinds of corrupt kinds of things. And it's a very frightening situation. And mm-hmm. And it ain't necessarily white police officers, because it's black police officers too.
Hmm.
It's
okay.
People wearing that uniform.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. I've been harassed by black police officers, too.
Okay.
And you go back and you Google some of the incident where that black police officer took his frustrations out on this young black man and beat that man like the way he beat that man. He lost his job for it. But, I don't see color when it comes to this in a lot of ways, because I've been harassed by black police officers, too.
Well, Keith, thanks for sharing with us. We've got an issue with your signal, but I appreciate what you're saying. Can you talk to me real quick, Dr. Evans, about what Keith was sharing with us? Obviously, when we're looking at the broader issue of the impact that this has on the mental health of the community, not just black people, but to a certain extent, you know, all people, this George Floyd thing, as you said earlier, is really weighing heavily on the mental health of people around the world. Can you talk to me a little bit about how that is impacted? And short of police reform, how do we as people who are impacted by this trauma fix ourselves?
No, that's a great question because, you know, the reality is that this trauma that we're experiencing, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years of oppression and trauma passed down year after year, where people who are just not treated equally are traumatized as a result of what they're experiencing. This is not just impacting black people. So this is impacting everyone that's involved in American society. It's being impacted because you do have individuals who are of other races who are impacted, who want to get involved, who want to help. And like you said, you know, where do we start is just having a real honest conversation about how we got to this place and being able to really own the roles that we've played in this. You know, everyone has had a role in this thing. And at this point, you know, in order to heal, we have to have some real conversations and really be able to understand the trauma that we've experienced so that we can face it. We can't hide it. And that's the typical response that I see is people just want to avoid the conversation. They want to ignore the truth, the reality of what people have gone through and experienced and how we've gotten to this place. And, you know, and for some individuals, you know, even on the perpetrator side, the perpetrator have experienced trauma as well, because some people, you know, we're talking about generational trauma and social learning theory. So when we get into social learning, you learn from the way, you know, what you've experienced, your environment, what you've seen. So it could be very well traumatic to be a child and you have an individual who is a chain. That's your pet. You have essentially a human pet, you know, and that's not something that you decided. That's something that you were born into. That could be traumatic for you as well. So, you know, on both sides, when you get into the response of police, the police right now are also on the other side of the trauma, because, you know, police now are starting to be held accountable. You got police being fired immediately after these events. You got, you know, it's almost like it's in some places it's the police against the community. And so, you know, you do have police acting out and in response. And so to the gentleman's point, you know, some officers are actually acting out in response to the trauma that they're experiencing. And that's why, you know, you had Rashad's response, because he was like, hey, I don't know what's about to happen to me. I don't know if these guys have my best interest at heart or if they want to hurt me. So what do I do? How do we know what a person is thinking? Not all officers have best intentions, but some do. And I worked in law enforcement for 14 years and did training, and I know some people take a job specifically just to enforce authority. And then some people take the job because they want to save lives, and we don't know who we're interfacing with at that moment.
Interesting. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Reggie, calling from Oxon Hill. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, sir. Yeah, I want to talk about the Rashad Brooks case that just got shot in Atlanta.
Yes, sir.
The thing that I don't understand is that as a community, I don't hear anybody talking and saying that where we are wrong or where Rashad was wrong. You know, we need to be more vocal in telling our own folks that you cannot resist arrest. You cannot, you know, fight and fling your arms and fling off from the police and all that type of stuff. Like, if he would have complied, he would have not got shot. You know, it was two wrongs. He should not have tried to run off and tried to, you know, do all that stuff. And he was drunk, he was intoxicated, so I give him that. That's probably why he did that. He doesn't seem like a guy, from what they say, to do all of that type of stuff. But if he wouldn't have tried to run and fight the police and wrestle and take the taser and all that stuff, you can't do that. And we as a people, we have to let that be known and be more vocal about that, because I don't hear anybody saying, I haven't really heard anybody saying that where he was wrong in that, you know, because if we're not vocal enough about that, it's going to be another black man that's going to do the same thing, and then he's going to get shot.
So hold on, Reggie, I want you to stay on for a minute, because I think you've mentioned some really important points here, and I say points plural. And I think we need to really kind of unpack that from the perspective of you know, the mental health of and the mental state of what is happening during a police encounter. Because let me ask you this. Do you have children?
No, I don't.
Okay. I have a daughter, and I am also a son, and the talk that we, you know, quote unquote, the talk that has become kind of a mainstay for African Americans in this country, that talk being how you interact around police, is one that fathers and mothers have had with their children, and specifically their sons, and is every logical thing that you were talking about until your last name is Philandro Castile, when you do everything you're supposed to do and you still get shot.
But
I understand that, but
this guy wasn't doing what he was supposed to do.
But that's and we can argue that point. And one of the things that Dr. Evans was just saying was that considering, If this encounter had happened before the death of George Floyd, it may very well be possible that he may not have had so much to worry about. But again, from what we've seen in the video of what happened to George Floyd, he wasn't arrested, and we see what happened to him. Dr. Evans, am I overstepping here? What's going on?
Well, I first want to validate his comment to say that, you know, this guy did not respond in the best way, you know, and we can go back and forth about, you know, the mistreatment or the unequal treatment of individuals who do the same thing. I saw a video of an interaction with two white officers and a white man, and they were absolutely wrestling the same exact way as Rashad. Wrestling, this guy got into the police car and drove off after fighting with these cops for several minutes. Their response was totally different, right? And so aside from that, let's just validate. Rashad did not respond in the best way. He was fighting with the police. He was absolutely wrong for that. But let's get into why that happened, right? Let's get into what was going on in his mind. What snapped at him to say that I have to fight for my life at this moment? So, you know, we're not going to argue whether or not the police encounter was the best way to respond. We know that. But outside of black people, who else has to talk to their children and say, this is how you got to respond to police? White people don't have that same conversation. But black people do, right? Why is that? Because of how black people are treated in police encounters. So you're absolutely right. Yeah, we got to keep that in mind, and we got to be able to respond appropriately. But when you are traumatized and you're under emotional strain and you are absolutely you're thinking about, can I make it home to my kids? Can I make it home to my parents or my wife? You're going to do whatever it takes. So the psyche of what was going on.
Yeah, and Reggie, let me say now, let you make your point. Yeah, I agree, just like Dr. Evans just said. Yeah, don't run, don't fight, no sudden movements. Do what you're told and move twice as slowly as slow means to you. Because, again, you don't want to make any sudden movements. But to the point that, you know, where we are as far as what's happening in the heads of black men right now, these, Reggie, are uncomfortable times. Go ahead and make your point, then I'm going to take another call.
Okay, yeah, that's all I want to say, that, you know, we need to be more vocal on what not to do with the engagement of the police. You know, you cannot resist arrest. You cannot fight the police. You cannot have a fist fight with the police. You know, you shouldn't want a fist fight or anybody with a weapon. After all, the policeman has a weapon, a gun and a taser. Why would you want to hit or wrestle with the man, even if he was a policeman or a regular citizen? Okay. What difference does it make? The man has a weapon. You don't do that.
Absolutely right. But guess what? He probably knew the same exact thing. He probably knew exactly what you just said. But in the moment where it's life or death, all training kind of goes out of the window. And I would submit the officer probably felt, you know, like, hey, it might be, you know, the guy turned around with the taser and tried to tase him back. His natural response in training is to pull his weapon. So you're absolutely right about what you're saying. But at the moment when you are trying to fight for your life, you may not be thinking about what's logical and what makes sense. You're trying to survive.
Yeah. Reggie, thank you so much for your phone call. I appreciate your contribution to the conversation. Let's go to Jason calling from D.C. Jason, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good evening to you and your guests. The question and concern that I have is, number one, we talk about, you know, what needs to happen in order to correct the communication between the police and the citizenry. But my concern is this. Why are there so many white police officers always governing communities that are predominantly black? I mean, it seems like to me, if you got a community that is predominantly black, then you should have black police officers governing that and not white. And I think what's happening is that you got a lot of these redneck cops that don't have any idea how to communicate with black people, most of them don't want to communicate with black people. And they're giving, and that's the reason for them to come out and shoot black people, because I feel that they don't, first of all, they think they can get away with it. And secondly, it's just a racist attitude that they have. So my concern is, why don't, you know, the powers that be indicate that we need to have more black police officers that are in black areas and let the white people go in their own areas and govern their own places. That's my concern.
Well, before I let you go, let me ask you about that.
Okay.
Because on the surface of it, sounds just peachy keen, considering mm-hmm. where we are right now.
Mm-hmm.
But 30 years ago, 40 years ago, someone would have said that is racially prejudiced and discriminatory. We're only going to have black police officers in white communities and white police officers in white communities, as it was during pre-desegregation. And so does that mean that black police officers should not enforce the law in white communities?
Right, yeah. If they're killing black people, yeah, they should be banned from coming into the areas. I mean, we got to step up to the plate, and we got to do something, because we know what's happening now. It's not working. They've been communicating there have been all kinds of community task force to try to communicate with police and all, and they still end up doing the same thing. I mean, you know, you would think that by now, with all of the problems that we've been having with the police shooting black men, that there would be a slowdown in that thing, but it's not. And something's okay. got to be done. Now, but back in the late 60s and the 70s, there were gangs in New York, in the Bronx, in New York, and they were fighting each other. And they had the white police office coming up there trying to settle the differences between the gangs. So what they indicated, what they did, I can't remember the gentleman's name that had all the gangs that were Hispanic, they had Hispanic mm-hmm. police officers there. And all the gangs that were white, they had white police officers, and the black, they had black, and they were able to settle. They came okay. to some kind of settlement, and I would suggest that they use that same methodology that they used then that they can use now. Sometimes it's not a matter of being something outdated, but if it worked then why can't it work now?
Well, let me just say this, and then I'm going to move on, but I think what you're talking about is cultural competency, which has been a part of a broader discussion in police departments pre-George Floyd over the past several years. And a lot of these issues were coming up during the early 2000s about what cultural competency looks like for community policing and the impact that it has on communities of color. And I think that certainly is something that needs to be discussed carefully and in depth. But thank you so much, Jason, for sharing your thoughts about this. Dr. Evans, you know, one of the things that really struck me today, I did an interview, and you may have heard this conversation or part of the conversation that I had with Veronica Corley about an incident that she had, that her daughter had, with a white woman. Veronica Corley is black, her daughter is black, and she also has an 8-year-old son. But the white woman, according to Ms. Corley, said, walked up to her daughter who was loading laundry into the car and said, "You don't belong here." And things kind of escalated into the point where yesterday there was a protest, a march against racial prejudice. Ms. Corley didn't see the incident. But one of the things that she did say to me during the course of the interview, and it really struck me, she said, "What if that incident had happened to my 8-year-old son? And what if this white woman had called the police because she believed that her son did not belong in that neighborhood?"
Mm-hmm.
That goes to the very heart, I think, of what we're talking about now, because, you know, even the very young, and this is about trauma again, and this is about the mental health of our community, not black men in this case with the mother, but a young black boy, what the possible impact of something like that could have had on him. Talk to me about how careful we really need to be.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, this is a, as one of my friends likes to say, is the onion conversation. You know, there's many layers to this. You know, I first want to start by saying that, you know, we don't want to diminish the fact that that happened to a young black girl, because there are many, you know, unspoken of young women who have died as a result of police brutality, violence, being innocent. You know, Breonna Taylor shot in her home, police still not arrested. So women are being victimized as well, and mothers and fathers of their young daughters and young boys are afraid. And, you know, rightfully so, you know, and, you know, unfortunately, you know, men are being treated a certain way and they're being uplifted in the social media and on the news, but women are as well. So, you know, the fact remains is that young black people have something to be concerned about, and parents have something to be concerned about. You know, this hypervigilance that we have just when it comes to every day allowing our kids to go outside just to play or go to the store. You know, my kids now are old enough to learn how to drive, and we're having discussions with our children about, you know, what are you feeling about even getting your license, and do you want to even have that kind of responsibility that you may get pulled over and have to interact with police? You know, this conversation is like you say, is layers to it. And, you know, we absolutely have to keep in mind how to respond. Like what the caller said before, you know, we should know how to interact with police. I think everybody should. I think everybody should be respectful to the police and should know how to follow instructions and things of that nature. But we have to go an extra mile to make sure our kids absolutely know your life could be at stake. You know, I was talking to a 16-year-old kid today, you know, high school. He said, you know, I don't know whether I'm going to make it home. He's learning how to drive now. He's in driver's ed and he's on the road. And we're talking about this. And he said, if I get pulled over, I'm going to be thinking, I hope I live through this. You know, and so this is hugely concerning.
What do you tell your patients, the 16-year-old, about encounters with the police? And I'm talking about the mental health piece of this and dealing with the fact that they may be feeling traumatized, even though they perhaps never had a problem with the police, but are seeing the George Floyd videos and the, you know, Rashard Brooks videos and all of these things, whether it's 16-year-old or a 60-year-old or anyone in between. How do you counsel them to feel better?
Right. It's case by case. You know, this today as well, I had another young man, he's, you know, early 20s, and he's really disconnected from it. He's chosen to turn away from it because he just doesn't want to be, I think, susceptible or vulnerable to the possible trauma of experiencing this. So everybody's experiencing it in a different way, and I have to meet them all where they are. You know, even the 16-year-old is, you know, I have to validate his feelings. You know, he's absolutely right. Yes, this is something I have to be concerned with. And he knows he's smart. He knows how to interact with the police if he gets pulled over. At the same time, it's not going to stop your mind from racing and your heart from racing. And that fear that's going to be provoked from, you know, all of which you've seen and witnessed, you know, you've just witnessed, and we're still in civil unrest. We're still protesting. All of this is still going on in real time. And then he said, I wasn't expecting this so soon. I wasn't expecting to see something like the Rashard Brooks case so soon. And, you know, it's one thing after another, and it's just adding on to the complex trauma. And so we just have to unpack each event and, you know, and really meet them individually where they are.
Is the emotional trauma fixable for those who are bombarded with this information?
Yes, I would say it is. I think that, you know, the challenge that anyone faces when it comes to trauma is facing it. You know, our body's natural response is to do something that's going to help us to get through. And most times it may be dissociating ourselves from the actual event. There's so many number of ways that we respond in a way to protect us, to add a layer of protection so that we don't have to continue to re-traumatize and experience it. However, when we don't face it, it's working in the background. It's eating us up. It's coming out in other ways. And so the challenge is to help individuals to face what it is that they're dealing with. And so it's absolutely fixable. But at the end of the day, it's about the work that you're willing to put in. And the time, because we can't put a time frame on how long it's going to take for you to be able to heal. The healing is absolutely possible. You know, I've seen, you know, I have individuals who are victims of their parents being murdered, or, you know, children committing suicide. And how do you recover from something like that? And it takes time. You know, the days that we meet, we're just working through it. And it's very possible, but you have to put in the work, and that's the challenge.
You know, I was off last week. Prior to last week, for several weeks, as it related to just really kind of focusing on, you know, the George Floyd situation, and many of my colleagues, many of them black men, and we wake up with it, we watch it all day, we report on it, we go to bed with it. Last week, I turned it off because I didn't want to see any more George Floyd. And when I finally turned it back on over the weekend, there's Rashad Brooks. Real quick, 30 seconds. Is that the healthiest thing to do, to kind of separate yourself, to be aware, but at some point you got to turn it off?
Yeah, and I think that's a great question, because again, you know, when we're in the midst of trauma, you know, it can add on to your traumatic experience and your emotional response if you continue to be exposed to it. So it's absolutely okay to just unplug and take a break from it and really deal with what you're going through at the moment so that you can recharge and reboot and get ready for the next thing. And that's the unfortunate thing, is there's going to be a next thing.
Yeah.
And that's what we know. We know there's going to be a next thing, and we have to be ready for it. So
the attorney for Rashad Brooks's family said the very same thing as he ended the press conference. He said, the shame is that I'll be back here in a few months, because this is going to happen again. And that is unfortunate. Dr. Robert Evans, thank you so much for talking to us. I really appreciate your input and your expertise. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, June 15th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.